Self-discipline that brings no regret. thy compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit, thy compassionate endeavor that results in goodness, thy passionate mindfulness that proves this path, thy compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these three pure precepts. The precept of restraint and religious observances. The precept of obedience to all good laws. The precept to benefit all sentient beings. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 grave prohibited precepts. Not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so. Not to take that which is not given. Not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct. Not to tell lies nor practice believing the fantasies of authority. Not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so. Not to publish other people's faults. Not to extol oneself and slander others. Not to be avaricious in the soul of the teachings. Not to be angry. Not to speak ill of this religion or any other. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving kindness, in the practice of pure attention, in the practice of ever-expanding faith, in the practice of constant devotion, in the practice of inquiry through correct dhamma. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Oh, happy, blessed day. Oh, happy, blessed place. Oh, happy, blessed time. Oh, happy, blessed path. Oh, happy, blessed opportunity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here, in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply vow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures, and desires. I am born of karma. I am heir to karma. I abide in karma, and I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma, and I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Dutyambi tatyambi sabha. Again and yet again may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening. For even to awaken from deep sleep and face the new day, there must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other, as the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness. will end suffering. If ending suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer, so we can drop that and end suffering.
Sunday morning groups are recorded and made available to people in our monthly donor program. So what should we look at this morning? June.
I'm reading a book called Being Wrong. It's the author calls it Wrongology. A study of wrongology. And it's really good. It's really clear. She's a very clear writer. She's funny. It's very thorough. It's very well researched. She talks about believing and knowing, and that almost everything that we say we know is a belief. Mm-hmm. And she cites a study that was done. A teacher at a university had a number of people write down something that they remembered in detail from a long time ago in their life. Mm-hmm. One of them, they called it flashbulb memories. We back then called it snapshots. Mm-hmm. And it was just those little things that you remember, mm-hmm. often a kind of important or traumatic or some sort of moment like that. Mm-hmm. So the teacher had people write those things out. And then 3 years later, contacted each of them and had them write it out again. And about 7% got close to the first one.
Oh, wow. And 93% was nowhere in the ballpark.
Well, some huge percent, where there was not even the major details weren't even the same.
Wow.
And some fairly good percentage, the whole thing was completely different.
Wow.
So it's really pretty revealing, uh-huh. about memory. Uh-huh. About what I think I remember, what I think I know because I experienced it. Mm-hmm. And it's you know, it's pretty compelling. Mm-hmm. It's pretty much yet another reason just to let the past go and just be here. Uh-huh. Because the past is fiction.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's fiction that never existed anyway.
Yeah. Well, it's letting the past go, but what on a deeper, maybe more subtle level, it's letting go any belief or conversation that we can even know the past. Because not only is it fiction, we only have the belief that we can even know it because of the conversation that we're attending to in the instead of being in the moment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. She says that current information in brain studies, I suppose, says there isn't so much a memory center in the brain that bits and pieces of what we think we remember are stored all over the brain.
Uh-huh.
And that remembering, in quotes, is a process of all of those bits and pieces coming from all these different areas and coalescing.
Wow.
Now.
Wow.
And they seldom ever come together in the same way from the same places to give you the same picture.
I get.
And if they do, if you think they do, and that one of the biggest stumbling blocks we have is that we don't believe that. We think we remember correctly.
Yeah.
And it's very, even if it is somehow revealed to us that we are not remembering a thing correctly,
uh-huh.
we don't believe that we
Yeah. Wow. So I get this image of like turning a kaleidoscope and this picture falls into place of all these little bits and pieces of memories and things like that. And then we just like would go to the mat that's the reality. And then, even if someone were to take a look at this picture, no, that's the memory, that's it. You know, we would just go to our death defending that's the picture, even though it's just what's there right there in that moment, that particular collection of shapes and memories and all of that.
Yeah. Gosh. And then the other part of it that occurred to me is all the things that the voice in my head labels as regrettable things, particularly sad things or stupid or all the self-hating things. The way that they're stored inside this little mass of gray cells is has nothing to do with anything.
It's totally
and probably never did.
Gosh, that is so true, isn't it? That when what is totally impersonal, egocentric karmic, in our way of talking about it, egocentric karmic conditioning, self-hate, overlays all of this artificial, made-up, nonsense meaning that we mistakenly believe, and therefore it essentially, it's what Sherry is saying all the time, we're essentially in primary relationship with that instead of the moment, which is constantly new, constantly changing, no meaning or anything. It is just what is. And so here we are, in practice, getting that, really being shown how things work and being offered a different way, that not being in primary relationship with that meaning-making machine, but rather being in relationship with life.
Yeah. Yeah.
And as you say, this author is making a compelling, looking at it from a different perspective, not from Zen Buddhist perspective, but from certainly a similar perspective through science or whatever. Same thing. Why would we want to do that? Maybe is her point.
I'd like to offer two great teachers.
Was there more to you?
Sorry.
Is that it? Thank you. No, it's okay. Go ahead.
I just would like to offer that I've noticed two great teachers for Zen Buddha in my life have come into my world in the same year, and one is I've had my first dog come into my life and my family, and the other is my mother was diagnosed with Alzheimer's.
Oh, wow.
And being present with her And my dog this year has taught me more about being present than ever before.
Yeah. Wow.
And that's been beautiful.
Yeah. Well, those are really big, spiritual workshops that we'd say. Having a dog who we can, project lives in nowhere but in the moment, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And then having this person that you love in your mother diagnosed with Alzheimer's, that is another way, an invitation to be, I'm projecting, to really be in the moment. Because anywhere else is just kind of just too painful. Is that your experience? That's my projection.
It's been surprisingly beautifully zen with mm-hmm. my mother, as challenging as it's been. Mm-hmm. It's been a gift.
Yeah. Yeah. Is there more? Thank you. Makota.
I love that first conversation and the idea of the being wrong. Uh-huh. What I want to look at has a lot to do with being wrong, kind of from a different perspective. Uh-huh. But it's also kind of related to that first conversation in that I was hearing a lot about kind of the ways that the identity is created and held together, falling apart.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. So I've been looking kind of through the lens of the practice intensive at what comes up around work and stuff. Uh-huh. And I've seen two things.
So let me just catch others up. So we're in the midst of a practice intensive where the curriculum that we're all invited to look at for this week is how the identity is maintained through work, through, getting stuff done and thinking that we're actually doing things, but in reality, it's life moving through this human and like that.
Mm-hmm.
And you're seeing?
Yeah. So the one thing... it's not directly work-related, but it definitely happens in work. I talked about it in group the other day, basically energy.
Uh-huh.
What I'm saying about it is essentially there's this really narrow band of energy right in the middle. It's about a millimeter wide, where basically I'm firing on all cylinders. Like uh-huh. That's where I'm just rock and roll and everything's great. Like there's a ton of energy, there's no pain. The mind is clear, I'm focused, I'm in a good mood, I feel connected, like mm-hmm. everything's just working.
Mm-hmm.
That's that narrow band.
Mm-hmm.
and essentially, one thing I noticed is that it's actually, gosh, it's a miracle. I'm actually in that band the majority of the time.
Uh-huh.
I mean, like 60, 70% of the time.
Uh-huh.
Wow, praise be.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But then there's a lot of times too when I'm not. And basically what happens is if I'm not in that little narrow band of feeling the perfect energy, it's basically I'm wrong. I'm having the wrong experience.
Uh-huh.
And it needs to be different.
Yeah.
And I need to change it. And life's going like this.
Yeah.
And then I'm kind of, well, I'll get back to it. So that's the one thing that I see.
Yeah.
The other thing I saw was definitely specific around work. We were doing this great project yesterday. And I was going about doing my thing and having a ton of fun
mm-hmm.
until I saw someone else that was doing the same kind of thing and saw their work. And instantly there was comparison. And I was like, oh my gosh, they are so good at that.
Oh.
Like, it's perfect. And they're so quick. It's like so much better and quicker than you.
Aww.
And it was like I went from having so much fun to like, you suck.
And what then, a brain on my parade, Mom.
I know.
Yeah.
It was just rotten. And again, there was that kind of basically, there was this, the standards.
Yeah.
The standards and the comparison. So the bar is here. And I mean, if I wasn't paying attention to the bar, everything would be fine. But it's,
it is the same process that you were just describing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And with both of them too, it's like, I mean, as far as performance goes, generally, gosh, again, like thanks to life moves through and often I am able to perform at a really high level. But then like there's the bar is set and it's basically the same with the narrow band of energy. If I'm at that level of performance, okay,
mm-hmm.
then everything's okay.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm not, I'm wrong. Mm-hmm. I'm totally having the wrong experience. And I saw what happened. Like, voices came in. As soon as I was falling short and not meeting the standards, the voices were like, I hate this. Mm-hmm. Like, at one second I was loving the job, and the next second, because I suck at it, was like, I hate this job. I want a different job that I'm good at. The thing that came in this morning around all that was like, wow, this was earth-shaking for me. It was like how the being is controlled,
yeah.
Basically, with those two things, is that if I'm within that narrow band of energy and I'm performing at this really high level, then I'm allowed to participate. Then I'm allowed to show up and participate. But if I'm not, then the information I get is I need to, like, not participate and hide out and try to, like, find a way to get back to that narrow band of energy where I feel perfect, yeah. And somehow perfect my game so that I can nail it, kind
yeah.
of thing.
Yeah. And the way you're getting that information about whether you're in the band, whether you're meeting the standard, whether you suck or whether you're doing good, whether you're producing, all of that is through that,
conversation. Right? Completely. Completely.
That's the one source. It's like that's the only source of information you get. It's like right there, right, about that. And when that is in control, then it really is controlling the human being.
I was just going to reference a propaganda news channel.
Yeah,
like, that's the only place I get the news. It's going to look like this.
Exactly.
I also pictured like this control room, like we've seen in the Voices cartoons.
Uh-huh.
All the voices in there just like monitoring the dials and like, ooh, there's a little peep. That's wrong. Like, hit the siren button.
Yeah.
Wrong.
Yeah.
And it's really rough out in the world. Because literally, that is the process that talks this guy into isolation and withdrawing.
Mm-hmm.
And like, it can literally get him to like go hide in his room, mm-hmm. basically, until he feel, don't answer your phone because you don't feel perfect.
Yeah.
Don't accept that invitation because you feel a little off, whatever the heck that means.
Yeah.
Don't do this new job because you might not do it perfectly or as good as that other person.
Mm-hmm.
And just the gift of monastic practice, that there is no hiding out in your room. It's not going to happen.
Right.
It's like, I have to show up however I feel, whatever level I'm performing, and I get the gift of seeing that nothing horrible happens.
Right. Yes, you get the gift of seeing that that voice lies.
Mm-hmm.
That practice is always on the side of life, and so as the guy points out, when we're willing, everything can do that. You know, everything can do that for us.
Yeah.
To see that we aren't really bound to that, and when we're willing to bump up against that voice, no matter what, and show up or just face it or whatever, that it will reveal, the life will reveal that voice is lying.
Yeah. Yeah. And hearing that, like, it seems like what is required is the willingness to just do it.
Yeah.
Just to show up. Because if I don't, if I hide out, it just reinforces that same thing.
So true.
It takes me to like the Michael Jordan beautiful quote that I can't remember all of it, but it ends like, I failed over and over and over again, and that's why I succeed.
Yes.
And like what was mentioned in a recent newsletter in the Practice Corner, someone talking about a motivational speaker that said,
yes,
the first time I did it, I was terrible.
Yeah.
But then I did it again,
uh-huh.
and I did it again, and I did it again. And that seems like that's where freedom is at. It's like, okay, the energy feels a little funky.
Yeah.
The information I'm getting from the voices says something horrible is going to happen. I'm going to do it anyway.
Exactly.
I'm going to do it anyway.
Yes, and that, you know, I love that. That's in so much of what we say is again and yet again, Mary. So again and yet again, again and yet again. And, you know, the emphasis on our practice commitments, that's another benefit of how, you know, living monastically, but also just out in the world, or keeping those practice commitments, no matter what, just doing it, just doing it, just doing
right.
it. And that in itself is what kind of chips away at that addiction, if we would call it that,
sure.
to egocentric karmic conditioning.
Yeah.
Because it's not that the thing itself is the Let's see what I'm trying to say. It's what we were talking about in the earlier group about letting awareness do the work. It's not like we have to try to make that happen by doing it and doing it and doing it. It's that we just keep showing up, and then awareness does all the work. Mm-hmm. And then we're, and then it's like, at some point then, it's like the change just fall off. Oh, I see.
Yeah, that's such a great point, too, because, of course, conditioning would want to turn it in to make standards about that. So yes. Now, no matter how I feel, I have to, and if I didn't, then I'm, No, that's not it.
Yeah,
it's about willingness, but it's about losing interest in how I feel and just keeping the commitments. And it takes me back to that place of, in practice, you know, we hear about how you can get to this place of kind of being back at the beginning and knowing the place for the first time, mm-hmm. where nothing has changed and yet everything is different. Mm-hmm. And what I'm seeing in that is, you know, I used to, when I first came to practice, it was like, sweet, now I got this thing that will help me to always feel great in that narrow band of energy and help me always perform perfectly. That's not it. The practice, like what I'm aspiring to, is being able to be a complete wreck or whatever, you know, feel whatever energy, perform at whatever level, and be okay.
Be okay.
Yeah, be okay.
And that was what the human really wanted all along.
Yeah.
I would like to speak to Morning Glory Muffins.
They're so, right in there. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, they're not. And I will tell you why.
Okay.
So yesterday morning, right? They came out, mm-hmm. and before I got to them, you know, there were eggs. And then there was the granola. So I went through and I got everything because I get to an identity that just take a little bit of everything, kind of at a buffet style. Try that, try that, try that. And then I got some Morning Glory muffins and I'm like, I look at them. Is there enough for two for everybody? Okay, just take one. So I took one, and I ate it, and I'm enjoying it, and I'm getting to a place where I've perfectly managed my breakfast. Where ego's perfectly managed, so I still have some muffin left, you know, at the very end to have, you know, is the kind of dessert thing. And then I hear a voice come in going, get another one. And I went, no, this was the perfect man. It was like, it worked great. I had a little bit of that. And it was like, no. And then all of a sudden I find myself up and I have another one. And I said, okay. If I'm going with conditioning on this, you've talked me into it, you cannot take away this experience. I am going to enjoy every bite of this second muffin.
Uh-huh.
Even if it makes me feel overfilled or whatever, and I'm going to sit here and not feel guilty that I'm not up in the kitchen, you know, before everybody else, and, you know, and nobody's looking at me like...
You'd be getting a head start on the dishes.
Exactly. Conditioning would have me, you know, have a second muffin. Now get in there and get in the dishes. So it was perfectly delightful. It was just so wonderful to really show up and be experiencing the muffin. So then this morning when I walked in for pickup breakfast... I read the list, and there were prunes, leftover prunes, and there was bread. Now, I thought I was late to pick up breakfast this morning, and I thought everything I would ever want would be gone.
All the good stuff,
right? And I look in, and it's like Christmas. It's like, oh, there's leftover prunes. And then I go, oh my God, there's a muffin. There's like one muffin. And so I pull them out, and then I go, wait a minute. Muffin isn't bread.
Oh.
Can I have it? And I'm like, okay, you know, you looked at this while you were here. It doesn't say you can't have the muffin. Don't assume that you can have the muffin. It's not bread.
Oh, those conversations are just wicked.
So I asked. I wrote a note. I asked. And the beauty about asking was there was no I that had to have that muffin.
Mm.
It came from a place of, you know, if the answer is no, there's these other lovely breads in there that I like, and or that, you know, the human likes, and it'll be just fine. Mm-hmm. And then I get this yes. And
Chris
Christmas. Oh my God, Christmas, New Year's, Hanukkah, I don't know, whatever, Kwanzaa, I mean, it was everything. So it was just this beautiful celebration of look at how beautiful the universe is when you ask from a wholehearted place, not from that ego-driven, you know, I got it, or don't ask, and then just take, which brings me around, I'm just keep talking here, which brings me around to an experience I had in my hermitage last night as I was recording, was I was listening to something from over the summer, taking care of my dog, and I just got struck with this wave of good-heartedness that was here.
Yeah.
It wasn't me, but there was just good-heartedness. And you know, I've heard Sherry say, you know, you're a good person, and you know, we have the hats, and this is a good person, right? Isn't there? Something like that. But I had not believed it. Like, I hadn't believed it. So the whole point was, what I saw was this loop that can either reinforce that goodness or take me out of goodness and put me into conditioning. Yeah. So by following guidelines and precepts and asking and receiving and being open, I see the goodness. Yeah. I see that inherent goodness.
Yeah.
And when I don't, I get locked into that ego identity that has to have what it wants, even at the risk of hurting, you know, other people or the human, where it gets locked into, I want it so bad, I'm just going to take.
There's an ego I that really just needs to be living through this human, and it's going to get what it wants, come hell or high water.
Yes.
And then, but that wasn't the dominant experience. What you're describing, what the experience that I, or the image that I get is that there was just someone there all along the way. Mm. Every step of the way. Mm. Okay, we see another muffin on our plate. Oh, golly, she's going to get to experience that. She's going to get to enjoy it. Oh, good, another muffin. What do we get? Well, I don't know. That's a half. And there's a presence, a kind presence there. And then in the hermitage, just, oh, the goodness is just there. Just you know, I say the mentor, true nature, whatever, just walking every step of the way, making sure this human gets her life.
Yeah.
Just kind of stewarding this life, you might say.
Yeah.
No matter what the circumstances, no matter what ego's throwing in the mix, no matter what, she's getting it.
Exactly. And when... And where my practice has really shifted this time at the monastery is during meditation, is coming back to that goodness.
Yeah.
You know, coming back to sitting with the experience of that and really starting to see just stories.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, right. Goodness. Or what I've been calling it, being alive. Or just really, it's hard to describe, being in a place of just seeing... Not seeing, just being.
Yeah.
And then it's so clear.
Yeah.
That all of this.
And see if this sentence kind of captures it. It's the attention has maybe been trained or matured or is training.
Training.
To be here.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness. And it's not that you're oblivious to those lures to pull you off, but you're not choosing them. You're seeing the goodness. And boy, when you see both, there's just no contest, you know?
Yeah.
It's oh no, I'd rather be with the goodness. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so there it is, through all the years of practice that you've done, and the attention being trained just over and over, like we're talking about again and again and again, and I just choose here. And then it's sort of like the fruit of our labor, free, that's not the right expression, but the benefit is getting that the joy of the experience of goodness knowing itself.
Yeah, in fact, when I sat here this morning just going, the joy of intelligence knowing it, I was like, that was so it. Now, I see that application, you know, with the morning glory muffins and with meditation, and then there's relationship.
Mm-hmm.
which just is the really, really real thing. That's so hard to choose the human over that conditioning that's keeping me in there. Mm-hmm. And while I've, my partner did move out, I did stand up for myself at a point and finally said, you know, I can't be in this like this. And then I got here and I'm like, how did I end up in a relationship again? And I'm listening to recordings and I'm going, oh, right. I listened to a story that said I couldn't not have that. You know, I listened to a story that kept me in it. So so it'll be interesting to practice yeah. when I get back. But
Yeah, interesting. And I project, you know, take like these experiences with the not so really real content, like
yeah.
the Morning Glory Muffin, you know, taking those with
yes.
you know, with us in and when we're faced with the really, really real stuff, it's not like we're there alone. We have the whole mass of our experience and the presence and the goodness and all of that that's right there too.
Yeah, and I do get an inkling, that's a really good way to put it. I do get that inkling of building that base of experience.
Yeah.
Building that training with coming to that place. To not get sucked into
mm-hmm.
that conditioned place.
Absolutely. It's all building. It's all training.
I think, is it the Dhammapada or the Bhagavad Gita where it says no good deed or no step on the spiritual path is wasted?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's just like, yes.
That's so my experience. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Oh.
It's like a previous, I also been looking at work.
Mm-hmm.
And the past couple of weeks, but more since precepts. And I've been looking at, skill and mastery and how to do something. Because
mm-hmm.
my conditioning is always, you know, it looks at someone doing something really well. And then says, okay, well, you need to be taught how to do that, and then you'll be able to do that.
Mm-hmm. You'll need to be what?
I'll be able to do that once I'm taught how to do
it. Taught how to do it. Okay.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And so I've been seeing how, so someone with a lot of mastery, the word that came up a lot during precepts was mastery.
Yeah.
So I've been looking at mastery in working meditation. And I'm watching someone show me how to do something who has that 10,000 hours doing
yeah.
something and goes, well, you go zip and you go like that and it looks great, just like that. And then you do it and it's like drip, 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 smear, smear, smear. And conditioning wants to come in with, well, what did you do wrong? And why doesn't it look like that? And how come you can't do it yet? And it's just, it's such a helpful place to that mastery place. And like, to be looking at, I think we're reading about it, but that whole idea of like, well, maybe it was in the assignment for the practice intensive, you know, that, you know, experimenting and trying things differently and being open to just letting life lead and all that. And I just keep seeing how, if there's a willingness just to be there, then I can just be there and do something mm-hmm. as best as I can do it.
Yeah.
Now, I may never get better at it, who knows? Mm-hmm. But I do know that if I'm not here, there's no chance of gaining some mastery at something.
Yeah.
Like conditioning can force me into being successful at something,
yeah.
but I'm not really... It's not coming from here. It can't really be repeated because it's coming from this kind of gritting and
yeah.
bearing down kind of place.
Yeah. And it never satisfies.
Oh, no.
Yeah. That quote mastery, that pseudo mastery at a task or whatever. I mean, we can get really good at anything. And, you know, like you say, conditioning can kind of force it to, and you drill and, coerce and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But it isn't, but it lacks the presence that is with what you're describing, that way of just learning and being with and that, I guess I'm hearkening back to the year of learning to love learning, everything we talked about around that the process, what you're describing is the process of being present while the human gets to act in the world,
mm-hmm.
whatever mm-hmm. that may, it may, the action may it be.
And that's what actually satisfies. That's actual mastery.
Right, right. And so I've also been watching like the difference between like if I'm sitting kind of alone doing some sort of kind of very basic thing, it requires skill, but there's not, it's just a thing I'm working on, right? Mm-hmm. And watching how conditioning really tries really hard in that time to kind of to take over, mm-hmm. right? But if I'm doing something and there's a spinning blade that I'm walking toward,
yeah.
it really is that place of like, it's kind of life and death, yeah. or finger and not finger. and there's much more willingness there to wake up. I'm like, okay, I have to be here because this is just not going to work.
Yeah.
I know where this is going.
Yeah, really. Nothing like the stakes being high enough yeah. to really kind of demand, it's like the musings, article that for this month, but the stakes are just high enough when you're seeing that spinning blade that I'm not going anywhere but right here in front of this blade, you know, spinning blade.
Yeah, and it's still wanting to like, there's someone who wants to get better at it, to mm-hmm. like gain some skill. And it just reminds me of like, I was once working with a carpenter and he's like, well, you can straighten out any 2x4 with a nail and a hammer. Mm-hmm. And like, can't do that. I couldn't do that back then. I'm maybe doing a little bit now, but it's like this is someone who had that 10,000 hours, yeah. and it's just, you know, conditioning just always wants to like just to set the standard at just a ridiculous level. Mm-hmm. You know that the standard from here should be like, well, I'm gonna be here, bring my attention to this, and do it. Mm-hmm. And at that point, if it doesn't actually seem like kind of like what we're looking for, what we're going for. I can do the next thing, which conditioning also doesn't want me to do, which is to communicate. Mm-hmm. And many times working over at the gatehouse, I do something and I'm like, huh. And I can just feel his hand on the back of my shirt holding me back from walking to someone and say, and checking it out, mm-hmm. you know? And most of the time I do check it out. And it's interesting because what usually comes back is, yeah, that's all right, mm-hmm. or they just say, well, then there's like another teaching process that goes on, but it's never that turn toward like, this is not the outcome we want, and this can't happen again. All the things that happen, you know, because I project that all onto that person.
Mm-hmm. So as the practitioner is practicing, doing whatever skill he was just shown to do. Mm-hmm. And then there's a result that is like feels there's a little, I don't know if this is right or not. The conditioned response is don't communicate, you know, whatever it is, you know, move on, don't, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. But every time the communication happens, there's always some sort of, we might say, an encouragement. Either, yeah, that's fine, or, well, let's do it this way, and then there's an opportunity to learn more, whatever. Mm-hmm. But the conditioned threat is never actually what life delivers.
Exactly. And that seems like, this last piece seems like the really helpful place to really pay attention to, because that is, one, that's where learning happens, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. because if I just like, I'm not going to say anything, I'm just going to move on to the next thing. I've suffered through the process, and the next time I'm going to be back in the same place because I didn't communicate about it, I didn't check it, I didn't, someone, you know, like just being here at the monastery, it's a learning experience. Yeah. It's a training experience. Yeah. And that if I don't communicate, I've closed myself off to training.
Yes, yeah. Basically, conditioning has sabotaged the very reason the practitioner comes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
If that communication isn't allowed to happen. Mm-hmm. That's big. Yeah. It's kind of everything, really, about being here.
Yeah. I decided to go home and this will be on the, available to listen to again.
That's right. That's on the October 20th. Jen.
So I'm looking at some content that is sort of falls into a similar description of what we were just looking at a few minutes ago with the narrow band of energy, mm-hmm. but mine is a narrow band of being free from pain mm-hmm. and discomfort. Mm-hmm. So that there's a perfect narrow band of physical health that, you know, I probably spend more time there than I realize, uh-huh. you know, but I'm either anticipating the next time I'm not going to be there or I'm not there and I'm trying to figure out how to get back there. Uh-huh. And so what I've been looking at since I came back here is there's a spot in my back, I call it the Bermuda Triangle, and it only and it only hurts when I meditate at the monastery. So this is like, I'm glad that it's happened again, because it's like, okay, there's like a big clue here.
Yeah.
It's like, this doesn't happen anywhere else. And so what is helping me do is sort of take the, you know, look at this from what Ashwini kept saying too in the retreat, that sort of meta process. Yeah. What's the meta process that's going on here? So I had my first back injury at 29. 15 years later, I've had, you know, unbelievable list of just physical injuries that aren't, you know, no major accidents or anything, but things that impair my life, you know, like have stopped careers. Like, you can't garden if you can't bend over, so you gotta find a new career, you know, so things like that. And so it's like, okay, how can I look at this 15 years worth of pattern and maybe get a sense that there's something else going on here, you know, see what else might be going on. Because it feels like this conversation, I can see how this this aspiration to be in that narrow band of perfect, you know, feeling perfect, it sucks a lot of my energy, you know.
So let me see if I'm with you then. So, what you'd like to be pain-free, but you can see how that gets interpreted as, okay, there's this ideal way that we've got to be, that's that band of perfect health. And conditioning, one way, maybe it keeps the whole story and the whole karma going, is that it measures that that's always being sort of, you know, touted as the ideal, and it measures every moment against that, so sucking a lot of the attention in that way. And then you're also looking at, okay, so what's going on here on the bigger meta process? Mm-hmm. How is this, we might say, this ego identity of karma that is being lived out in this human life, how is it getting maintained through this pain, this back pain situation, and this constant measuring of how I'm doing physically?
Yeah, yes. And I see one level of it that I see is that there's that, what I was just saying about like how it's changed major things in my life at periods of time, that there's a sense that like, okay, when I achieve that finally, then I can start living, you know, then things will fall into place. Then I'll have a relationship, then I'll get the perfect job, like somehow magically have a lovely house to live in. I see how they're not attached, but there is this like it's really like, I can't live until I figure this out, until I solve this. And figuring out and second guessing are two of my big karmic processes. And second guessing, you know, should I try this? Should I try that? Should I exercise it? Should I rest it? Should I, you know, and there's all this energy drain, like, in those processes.
Yeah, boy, that is so good to see, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, because the energy, Sherry was saying this on a radio show a few weeks ago about how that the pain is just a it takes just enough of the attention. That is a constant drain, like a constant siphoning.
I call it my karmic leak.
And what you saw around that story, it sounds funny to say it out loud, but it's so believable, is that I can't really live until then, but then I'll really have everything that I want by some magic. You know, everything's going to happen. And that belief, that maybe meta belief or maybe an undergirding belief or whatever, that boy, just shining the light on that and seeing that, wait a minute. Like, I can't live until
Well, I think what happens is that when I am in that band, which, like I said, I think happens probably more often than I recognize, but it's like everything is awesome, you know? Like, life is good, I can climb mountains, like, you know, so it feels like anything's possible.
Yeah.
And I just see the setup that it's like, I want to feel like anything's possible all the time, whether or not, you know, someone's sticking a poker in my back during meditation. I still want to see that anything's possible.
Yeah, it goes back to what we were talking about with Lakota a minute ago, isn't it? Because that's really what
the human has wanted all along.
Exactly.
It's like the heart never settles for conditional health, conditional love, conditional everything. It only will resonate with unconditional.
Yeah.
Unconditional well-being.
And it doesn't make sense to the conditioned mind that you can have that unconditional love and well-being and be in pain.
Exactly.
Like they just don't. It's like does not compute, you know.
Yeah,
like it
the two just, seem mutually exclusive.
Exactly.
But in a non-separate reality, of course, they're not.
Yeah.
Wow, that's good.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Ashwini said something a while ago, somewhere. It really struck me, and it feels like it's a lot of what we're talking about, which was... Someone was talking about having gone through a process and then checking out whether the process was an identified process. And the point was made that in going through the process, that process had to arise from awareness. Mm-hmm. And that we're conditioned to believe we're conditioned. Mm-hmm. In other words, we're conditioned to not get it when we've come from awareness.
Uh-huh.
We're conditioned to interpret whatever happened as through the conditioned lens that we must have been conditioned.
Uh-huh.
And that really struck me, is that it's not just the particular things that happen, the particular things we do, but it's the whole frame through which we interpret even the moments of awareness.
Yeah.
And so I had that experience. I came back from being away for a couple of weeks, and you know, whenever you've been away for a couple of weeks, then there's a sort of pile-up of things to attend to, and so there were those things, and then there was a request to participate in some fire recovery stuff. So all of a sudden, my calendar was like morning, afternoon, morning, afternoon, morning. There was something all the time, it's a source of, I can really get into suffering about that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would look at the calendar, and what would arise was this dismay about how in the world did this happen? And not catching it that it happened because I put my pencil there and went, and not getting that that when I wrote those things down, what arose was I want to help.
Uh-huh.
You know? And where conditioning wanted me to go was, what a mistake.
Yeah.
You know? And just totally misinterpret the whole event out of which that happened.
Wow.
And I don't think I would have caught that except for what Ashwini said. And I thought, I'm doing that. I'm doing that process of letting conditioning reinterpret awareness as a stupid conditioned response.
Yeah. Wow. That is so huge. So there's the awareness, there's the yes to do this, and it's manifested, we might say, in this busy calendar. Right? So now along comes conditioning, puts this filter right over the eyes of this awareness that has just flown through, mm-hmm. and it's like stupid, in dismay, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then
wrong.
Yeah. Yes. Exactly. All these pieces came together, and it's wrong. But then what happens is the human hears something, and then gets totally on the other side of it, and it's gone, and can recognize. Nope, there it is.
Yeah. It arose from well-being, from desire to be of service.
Yeah.
And then this funny thing, my wife has such a sense of humor, you know. So I'm working on a project that did sort of got backed up when I was away, and it's a new version of something I did a number of years ago for Christmas.
Uh-huh.
And so it really needs to be done by November 1st.
Oh, right.
Uh-huh. And I looked at my calendar and I thought, no way.
Uh-huh.
You know? And then yesterday I went out to the place where we were assisting with the fire, and that assistance is no longer needed.
Mm-hmm.
So all of a sudden these big 6-hour chunks of my schedule just went poof,
oh,
open up.
Wow.
And so all the excuses are gone for not getting this done by the end of the course. And so it's interesting because what arose was, oh thank God, this is very exciting. And the other thing that arose was, oh no, because then I'm going to need to do this, and it's a public thing, you know. And so, again, what conditioning wants to do is, what conditioning whispers in my ear a lot is, you're not an artist. And I say, I know I'm not an artist, but I really like to draw.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I'm just going to keep enjoying drawing. And this is sort of this ongoing dialogue. And there in that dialogue, there it is.
Yeah, I was about to say,
exactly
there.
I like to draw. I'm, like to draw. No, no. And there it is, you know. Yeah. And how am I going to not only interpret it, but what is the experience going to be?
Yeah.
So the experience is going to be that I think I'm going to just continue enjoying. That's what I wrote to my little facilitator yesterday. I think I'm just going to continue enjoying. That's what I'll do. I'll enjoy.
Yeah.
And I don't worry about whether I'm a this or a that.
Yes.
And then I just have to laugh because life just opened up all these opportunities to enjoy.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Enjoy myself right up to November 1st when this could be done.
Uh-huh. Yep.
And it feels like a real gift, and I can also just feel how conditioning was using the crowded schedule.
Yeah.
Both to tell me I was wrong to crowd it, and then to say, this is the reason you can't get this other thing done that you really want to do until the time opens up.
Well,
and then all of a sudden, you don't really want to do
it. Well,
this.
That's how conditioning abused it.
Exactly.
Again, outside of that filter.
That's right.
Life, we could also see, boy, life is really using that to give you an awesome workshop.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah.
Seeing, okay, now I get to see, oh, life said yes to all this, and conditioning does this and calls it stupid. Now it's opened up, and now there's a new workshop on the calendar.
That's right.
And there was the, oh, thank God, immediate response.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, now I get to do this. Oh, boy, okay.
Yeah, and just one other thing, you know, around the you're good at this, you're not good at this kind of thing, this came up. Someone once talked about this in group, and I refer to it a lot. I've actually said that a lot in group, but I find so helpful the notion that when a little kid is riding a tricycle, he or she is riding. And then when the training wheels go on, he or she is riding. And then when the bike is that far off the ground, he or she is riding. And then when it's an English racer or mountain bike, son, he or she is riding, and every moment of that is riding the bike.
Uh-huh.
It's not, finally, the person driving
finally
the bike.
Finally, riding a bike, yeah. It's getting a step on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes. Hi, I'm new to practice.
Yeah.
And so I think I've noticed. It's the third time I've been here. Part of the process is to share and to talk.
Yep.
I think it was mentioned earlier, you know, if you cut that part out, it's cutting out a big part of the process. And,
uh-huh.
and thinking about that a lot and being actually very fearful mm-hmm. about speaking in public.
Well, good for you then for getting those hands up.
Yeah, new situation. So
yeah,
yeah so I noticed that and just sort of noticing that fear is very familiar.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times it goes to, I don't really want to feel the fear, so I'll just sort of hang back a lot, and that mm-hmm. is very habitual.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's, something I'd like to drop a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. And as you're pointing out, there are two ways to respond. There's a fear. The fear's there, and I can either believe it and hang back, or I can just, what the heck, put your hands up. You know, and push through it or challenge it or want to let that go, and that that really is practice in a nutshell. It's showing up. It's doing what the guidance, you know, what seems to be a part of the process of being free, you know, and not following the habitual part of just hanging back and letting the fear sort of, I don't know, what do we say, kind of. Call the shots.
Yeah.
And so, how is it now that you?
Well, it's always better after. Once you jump into the cold pool, it doesn't feel as cold.
Yeah, yeah. It's a good analogy.
So my intent is to jump into the cold pool and then continue the process, time after time, without feeling, I guess. As fearful, and which I think will aid my process for
yeah.
practice. So, yeah.
Well, you know, we talk about that a lot. That the more we do it, so that fear is maintained. I don't know if this is kind of, you know, in your experience, but it's maintained in a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
That there's a voice in our head that's telling us something. Something will happen,
mm-hmm.
or this is why you should be afraid, or this is why you shouldn't, whatever. Right?
Right. For me, I don't really have anything to say. When I think about something to say, it's all just a confused mass of smoke screen in there that's, you know, what am I going to pull out and talk about? So there's that, and what if I say something wrong, you know, it would be bad, and yeah, so it's connected to a lot of different
conditioning, if you will.
So there it is. It's going on. It's saying, does it even say, like, you? What are you going to say? Or did, how does it sound in your head?
Mostly it's pointing out things what might go wrong.
This could go wrong. This could go wrong. And so here we are kind of listening to that.
Yes.
And in that, and in that moment, though, there's also some other presence that was, that's aware of that, that's really ready to not go with that anymore.
Exactly.
And I project that's who put us in touch. And the more we practice it, it's, you know, it's really a practice of just doing that kind of thing. Just doing the opposite of what the voices are saying. Just over and over, we were talking earlier, again and again and again. And whatever little, you know, tiny or large ways that that occurs to us in the moment, that's freedom. And it didn't sound like a confused, garbled smoke screen.
I've been looking at something that's going on around work and energy. Mm-hmm. And this workshop of being asked a few times recently, do you feel ready to do something?
Mm-hmm.
And just how much of an experience of anxiety that has been going on with that. Like the second guessing, the figuring out. And what I'm seeing about that is it's that experience of anxiety feels like the experience of checking in with conditioned mind about energy. So get on your ready. Because that system always says no, not adequate.
Yeah.
But then there's the, well, maybe I do feel right. Oh, but what if, oh, but you know, so yeah. It's just a big, process of getting more and more separate from energy and from that intuitive knowing. It has nothing to do with the conversation in the head, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, just really getting to see this like little workshop of big anxiety around being asked, do you feel ready to do something?
Mm-hmm.
And I got an amazing teaching from life, like a modern Zen story around this week, with a bird on the porch. It had flown into the archway and got stunned,
mm-hmm.
and was just sitting on the porch, not moving, just kind of blinking. So we put a crate over it so the cats couldn't get it, and I could see this like human here, like sort of wanting to ask it, do you feel ready? Ready for the crate to come off and move? Like, how are you doing in there? You know? like doing that process at the bird. Do you feel ready? As all of that was going on, you know, all of a sudden the bird found its way out of the crate and flew off.
Oh, wow.
And it was just that, it was just that getting to see and experience not being separate from energy, that as soon as the energy was there to move, it moved. It was all just one thing, you know. Mm-hmm. When the energy wasn't there to move, it was completely still, mm-hmm. even though there was this human fussing around it asking if it was ready. And then as soon as the energy was there, it moved. And I just...
Trusting the energy.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, with the bird, it wasn't a matter of trust. It was just no separation. You
right.
know? It was just, okay, I found the opening. I can do this. I'm flying now. You know, there it is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And with the human, it seems to be a few more steps in the process.
Because we have this remarkable ability to experience ourselves as separate from life.
Exactly. And an even more remarkable ability to drop.
Yeah, and it's just dropping in. I'm so excited about the email class that's coming up, that training of just following the energy and, you know, really being with it.
Yeah.
And I'm projecting, as you're sitting with that experience of the modern day Zen story with the bird, to see how first you were describing the process of looking to conditioning for mm-hmm. for sort of that assessment, and then now sitting with the process of not by owning the projection on the bird.
Yeah.
And it's what a beautiful workshop the whole thing is.
Right.
Do you know? Because all of that is, in a sense, being with the energy.
Right. And there was a kind of experience of that recently where I'd been asked several months ago about something, do you feel ready to? And then being that anxiety process around it. And then the other day I was just, you know, walking along and it dropped in, that thing, yes, you know.
Wow.
And there it was, just that energy there in that direction. And
time to move out of the crate. Time to move out of the crate. Right in.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you all. Mm-hmm.